The late Fred Allen. Ask your father. The late Fred Allen once said, he probably said it more than once, imitation is the sincerest form of television. And it's, you know, it's as true now as when he said it once or again. Once and again. But it's not just true of television, as it turns out. It's true of, well, we know it's true of the entire culture, don't we? I think that's the point of Maureen Dowd's column today, but it's also the point of a little true story from the True Story file here at the Le Show Dome. I'm in receipt of an email this week from a friend who's a producer at NPR, and I don't want to tick him off because, you know, I got to promote my movie coming out March 29th in L.A., New York, and San Francisco. So, you know, I'm tiptoeing on eggshells here, but still, you're going to notice this, so I might as well bring it to your attention first, so you won't think you dreamed it. You know, I've been reading stories from listeners of their adventures with airport security. Did I mention my story with airport security? Yeah, probably not. The hour and a half I waited, flying back from London in mid-December. An 11-hour flight, ladies and gentlemen. It's no piddling little puddle jumper here. And at the end of the flight, you know, they're slow getting the bags out of the plane. Because, what, they have to reach into the belly of a plane and get them. That's hard. And then, what, put them on a wheeled vehicle of some sort. Takes a while. So, took a while. And then I see this line forming around me in the baggage carousel area. And by the time I get my bags, I realize what the deal is. Somebody has decided, for I'm sure good and sufficient reasons, that they're going to inspect everybody's bag getting off the plane. Before we get to customs, even. So all the bags have to go through. So now, because my bags come off, like, maybe last, my wife and my bags, it's an hour and a half before we get out of baggage claim. An hour and a half in the one place in the airport specifically designed with the idea that, they're just going to be here for 10 minutes picking up their bags. We don't need to put anything there. So there's no seats, no amenities, no bathrooms, no Starbucks, no newsstand. If you're going to keep people waiting around for an hour and a half, put some perks in there, babe. And by babe, I mean airport managers everywhere. Anyway, that was my story. But as I say, I've been relating all these stories of airport security. I'm in receipt, as I say, of a note this week from a producer at NPR who says, we're going to steal your idea, but we want to talk to the people. You know, we don't like the idea of just reading the missives. So we want to talk to the people themselves. Can you pass on the names and addresses of the people whose stories you've been reading on the air? And I replied truthfully, hey, I flush the emails as soon as I read them. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've either contributed to this broadcast previously or just would like to be on NPR and be kind of a This American Life type voice telling your own story, they'll probably put nice music behind it. Just get in touch with Art Silverman at NPR, and he'll be glad to use you. Anyway, just word to the wise. If you're going to... Here's the question. That baggage that they checked as we were flying into LAX was in the belly of a transcontinental jet for 11 hours. You know what I'm saying? Now, all of a sudden, we should inspect it? Inspect it for the 2 hours I'm sitting in the nice lounge with the drinks. Anyway, hello, welcome to the show.
Get ready to play Indian, y'all. They don't do this nowhere else but in New Orleans. Here come the wild chopper tutor. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. From way uptown, y'all, in the big 13. And we coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. You can see Chief Jolly coming.
You can hear his big gang coming. You can hear them coming all over the 13 wall. He shoot Kunafuna, make the ship a Una. No bow, y'all, and he won't be bald. Charlie be hooping and a hollering. Say we gon' meet everybody. Then everybody sing Indian Red. And then we head for the heart of the city. Yeah, y'all, we wild and pretty. We the uptown rulers, just like I said. Sing it. We the uptown ruler. Yeah, we the wild chapatula. Yeah, from way uptown, y'all, in the big 13. And we coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. The wild man, he take off running. Spy boss, see another gang coming. Big Chief, stop on the avenue. Flag coming running on the double. Signaling that it might be trouble. Big Chief said, do like you wanna do.
As I dress in my suit, giving haters the boot. Straight up a wild out with my Mardi Gras crew. It's gangsta, probably looking shy and pretty. Chief Jolly Lil Gang showing haters the pretty. From the north to the south, from the east to the west. Chief Jolly and his gang show know how to dress. So in case you don't know, we ain't fear nobody. Lil Gang, so never give a shout out to Jolly.
Y'all, but it feels so good coming through our neighborhood. Big Chief smoking that fire brain. Downtown towards Tremé. Yeah, boy, we going all the way down. Then coming back home to the big 13. Yes, y'all, we the wild chapatula. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. The way uptown, y'all, then the big 13. We coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. Yeah, come the wild chapatula. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. From way uptown, y'all, in the big 13. Come on now. And we coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest town in New Orleans. Now get out the way, the St. John's are coming. Get out the way, nobody running. Get out the way, tambourine ringing. Get out the way, Indian singing. Get out the way, old Mardi Gras morning. Get out the way, give them the warning. Get out the way, uptown ruler. Get out the way, wild chapatula.
Get out the way, get out the way.
Come on, hey! Get out the way, and John's coming. Get out the way. Anyhow, we make y'all wild and bubble. Uptown ruler, wild chapatula.
Everybody here. Oh, pick up all that paper and trash.
Clean it up.
just don't know what to do. He says, come on all you dancing fools, tomorrow we all have to go to school. We're gonna clean up after modern talk. Yeah, clean it up, all the money wasters, clean it up. You got to taste it, clean it up after with the pretty paint. Oh, it's over now. They're cleaning up St. Charles Avenue, cleaning up St. Charles Parish, St. Bernard Parish, St. Tammany. Hey, clean up that stuff off Tulane Street. What is all of that I see on Carrollton? Clean it up, clean it up, yeah, clean it up. Yeah, New Orleans' most talked about club. They gonna clean up too.
Drip, drop, drip, drop, drip, drop, drip, drop.
It's raining so hard. Look like it's gonna rain all night. And this is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll have to accept the fact that you are not here. Tonight would hurry up and end, my dear. It's raining so hard, it's really coming down. Sitting by my window, watching the rain fall to the ground. This is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll just go crazy. It's raining so hard, brings back memories of the times when you were here with me, counting every drop, about to blow my top. I wish this rain would hurry up. So bad, I could hardly catch my breath. The harder it rains, the worst it gets. This is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll just go crazy tonight.
Yeah, because we all love the rain so very much. I love the change of seasons, as long as it doesn't happen around me. Hi, from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm... I think I should be Harrison Shearer, don't you think? All the Harrys change their name to Harrison and then become movie stars. Harry Shearer, I say, with from the home of the homeless with another edition of Le Show. Just a final note about New Orleans. Just... Yes, I've pointed out probably to you before... One of the signs of the uniqueness of that city. I think it's the only place in the continental United States where somebody has gone bankrupt running a gambling casino twice. How do you do that? Huh? It's New Orleans. But here's one, even more stupefying. What other, can you name a single city in the United States, city, town, municipality, rural settlement in the United States of America where else this could happen? Where the leading vote getter, they had a primary for the mayor, primary election to elect the new mayor. And two finalists are in the runoff. The leading vote getter, the second, let's put it this way, the guy who finished in second place, he's in the finals, but he's in second place, is the police chief. Like every police chief in every city in the United States, he's presided over a major decrease in the crime rate in the last few years. You know, it's happened everywhere, but everybody locally takes credit for it. So he gets to take. He's the police chief. He's presided over, I think, a 25% decrease in the crime rate, and he finishes second to the guy who runs the local cable TV franchise. I'm telling you, that's a unique city. Ladies and gentlemen, here's some stories that I haven't heard yet on the real news. Probably because they got all that Olympic stuff to cover. You know, that's important. The luge. The stovepipe. I got your stovepipe right here. The Better Business Bureau, acting on complaints from donors to the American Red Cross and critical reports about post-September 11th fundraising, has asked the Red Cross for information to help determine whether it still meets Better Business Bureau standards for charities. The information we're asking for is out of the routine, says H. Art Taylor, president of the Bureau's Wise Giving Alliance. Who knew? We want to make sure that the public can be confident in what's going on at the Red Cross. Red Cross officials said they would provide a response, but they haven't done so yet. The Alliance made the request last month for information about the $850 million donated to the Red Cross Terrorist Relief Fund. Remember, it was criticized for saying it would use some money for projects unrelated to the terrorist attacks. We've been getting a lot of complaints from donors that their intentions haven't been honored, said Taylor. We need to do an evaluation to determine if the Red Cross activities match donor intention. The Bureau has sent similar letters to other charities. None listed in this story. There. How about this? The Memphis Commercial Appeal reports about Catherine Smith, a Tennessee driver's license examiner who was one of six co-defendants in an alleged scheme to get Tennessee driver's licenses using false information for men with Middle Eastern ties. I didn't know the guys in the Middle East wore ties. Stop that. Smith died last Sunday in a flaming car wreck, and the FBI says her death was not an accident. State investigators found gasoline on her clothes. Well, what's suspicious about that? It was probably a self-serve kind of deal. She was who appeared last Monday before a federal magistrate. Federal prosecutor Tim DeScenza says there are connections linking two of the accused to the World Trade Center in the day. Two of the alleged co-conspirators of hers, let's say, to the September 11th stuff. So that's not suspicious. And pollution from car exhausts causes asthma, according to dramatic new official research. This is from the British newspaper, The Independent. A massive study backed by the California and U.S. governments, but you got to read about it in a British newspaper, don't you? Ain't that wild? Has demonstrated for the first time that ozone, the main component of smog, can cause healthy children to develop asthma. Top British scientists believe it has provided the smoking gun that finally links pollution, or as they say in Britain, pollution, to the disease, or the disease. The conclusion is likely to have an explosive effect on transport and health policy in Britain, which has the highest asthma rate in Europe. The government's own chief scientific advisor, Professor David King, coincidentally or not, calls for a ban in Britain on the sale of gasoline and diesel fuel. Well, I wouldn't get Dick Cheney's panties in a twist, would it? I'm sorry, knickers. All right, time for an exclusive feature, I think. When you hear that dead air, that's always time for an exclusive feature.
We're so sorry.
The apologies of the week from your friends at Le Show. By the way, you have no friends at Le Show. I just want to point that out. You know, you hear all this time from your friends at the big 90s. You don't have any friends inside the radio. Keep that in mind. First of all, the apology from last week we didn't get to because the program was pre-recorded or recorded. It's always if it's recorded, it was done pre. It's never post-recorded. You probably heard about this already. MSNBC, the third-place cable news channel. By the way, have you ever seen what the actual figures for viewers of the three cable news networks are? I mean, they talk about them as if they're big-time operations. I don't check the ratings for this broadcast. I'm going to put cash money on it. We've got more listeners to this piddling little radio program, not counting the internet, not counting shortwave, than MSNBC. 200,000 and change watch MSNBC. 200,000! That's twice the population that could cram into the Coliseum. That's the entire nationwide audience for MSNBC. Anyway, they had a guest on a couple weeks ago, Niger Innes, N-I-G-E-R, Niger Innes. He's the son of one of the founders of the Congress of Racial Equality, and he's a consultant. He's a pundit. He's a pundit. And he was on MSNBC yakking about something, and the guy who was spelling out, at the bottom of the screen, they always tell you who it is that's talking. Well, I'm going to repeat one more time. The man's name was N-I-G-E-R, Niger. And you know what happened, and they apologized. Anyway, media mogul Ted Turner, he delivered this speech, says the September 11th attacks were an act of desperation, and the hijackers were brave, but probably a little nuts. Well, when that made the rounds, the usual expected thing, reaction happened. Now Ted Turner is apologizing. He says his latest statements in that speech Monday night at Brown University were taken out of context. Well, why don't you start your own news network and take them in Oh, I see. His comments were reported in newspapers, and he said the hijackers were a little nuts and gave his view on the roots of terrorism. The reason the World Trade Center got hit is because there are a lot of people living in abject poverty out there who don't have any hope for a better life. AOL Time Warner, Turner is still a vice chairman of the organization, quickly distanced itself from the comments. What Ted Turner said in no way reflects AOL Time Warner's view about this terrible tragedy, he said. In a written statement, Turner said his comments were reported out of context. I deeply regret any pain they may have caused. I abhor violence in any form and wholeheartedly. People who witnessed the Brown University speech apparently came away with differing reactions to Turner's hour-long rambling. Students described it as entertaining, offensive, and kind of kooky. Those would be the reviews I'd like. Entertaining, offensive, and kind of kooky. I'm just going to borrow those. Use them as my own blurb. Former ambassador to the UN, Andy Young, a friend of Turner's, said brave was a bad description for terrorists. Yeah, look what happened to Bill Maher. Doesn't Ted read the papers? Didn't he read the whole Bill Maher thing? Young did not hear the speech, said Turner is deeply disturbed by terrorism and intent on eliminating its causes. This is the same guy who once said Christianity is for losers. Woody Page, Denver Post sports columnist, has apologized for enraging Mormons and officials of the Salt Lake City Winter Olympic Organizing Committee. A satirical column that didn't work. He accused Mormons of worshiping salamanders and seagulls in his satirical efforts, but he's apologized. And Mike Marland, a political cartoonist, has apologized for an editorial cartoon depicting President Bush as a terrorist for attacking the Twin Towers of Social Security and Medicare. He's apologized. So those are this week's apologies. Those are heavy-duty apologies this week, I would say. Ladies and gentlemen, a few weeks ago I talked about the whole idea of collecting them all. You know, you hear that all the time. Collect them all! Meaning, buy more stuff. How much are Beanie Babies worth nowadays? Anyway, two new things to collect, and then when you collect them all, have them fight with each other. Have them square off. From Britain, from Jerusalem first, the heads of 30 ultra-Orthodox Jewish schools in Israel have taken out a front-page ad in the newspaper to warn their pupils of the dangers of the latest student fad in Israel, collecting trading cards of rabbis. We've had those in this country for a while, I think. The principal's message said students only cared about collecting a full set of cards. Collect them all, rather than honoring the rabbis for their spiritual qualities. Secular children in Israel collect pictures of characters from the popular Harry Potter stories, but ultra-Orthodox children trade pictures of bearded, black-robed rabbis. Torah personalities, says the cover of one pack, referring to the name for Jewish scriptures. Learn about our Torah leaders. Collect a full set. The children don't concentrate on prayers or studies, the principal said in their ad, only on getting more cards. They condemned what they said were huge sums of money being wasted. That's called an economy. Meantime, a small-time entrepreneur has sparked a furor, pun intended, by launching a line of dolls featuring leaders of Nazi Germany. Collect them all, including Adolf Hitler and Joseph Mengele, the evil concentration camp doctor. Mike Fasella of Pound Ridge, New York, said he made only 50 copies of each doll and sells only to serious collectors and history buffs. They don't glorify Hitler or Nazis, said Fasella. How can they glorify anything when there are only 50 of them? God, that's good reasoning. I wish I'd thought of that. If I were mass marketing them at the toy store, that would be another story. The dolls, about a foot tall, are similar to the familiar G.I. Joe. Fasella said he has sold out already of both the Hitler and Mengele dolls. They cost $170 each. Next in the series, Nazi Gestapo chief Heinrich Himmler and propagandist Joseph Goebbels, who had nerbles at all. They have plastic bodies and 24 removable pivot points. The heads are made of cast resin and are hand-painted. The Hitler doll. Every stitch is accurate, Fasella said, admiring the doll. Look, he said of his Hitler doll, he's even got socks on. Fasella said he screens his buyers and wouldn't sell to anyone who seemed like a skinhead or a Hitler fanatic. He said most of his customers are World War II veterans. I wonder what they want to do with the dolls. Let's blow up Hitler, honey. And history professors. 100 years from now, he said, these will be in Sotheby's. These are museum quality. To me, it's an art form. Just collect them all, won't you, ladies and gentlemen? Okay. There we have hot property, which we will get to moments from now here on the show.
I heard them sing, come to the Mardi Gras. It was Rio in spring, time for Mardi Gras. I saw her there, confetti in her hair, swept along by the throng. 'Twasn't long till we met. When we kissed, my heart beat faster, faster than a castanet. We watched the moon come to the Mardi Gras, like a painted balloon at the Mardi Gras. Romance was ours beneath Brazilian stars. Love is there in the air, everywhere that you are. Make your sweetest dreams for two come true, come to the Mardi Gras. All of Rio was dressed for fiesta that night. With gaiety and laughter, every lover's heart was light. Though the town was on a spree, a joyous jubilee, I was lonely, just a stranger, till they called to me. I heard them sing, come to the Mardi Gras. it was Rio in spring, time for Mardi Gras. I saw her there, confetti in her hair, swept along by the throng. 'Twasn't long till we met. When we kissed, my heart beat faster, faster than a castanet. We watched the moon come to the Mardi Gras, like a painted balloon at the Mardi Gras. Romance was ours beneath the brilliant stars. Love is there in the air, everywhere that you are. Make your sweetest dreams for two come true. Come to the Mardi Gras. Come to the Mardi Gras.
Yeah, they have it there too, I guess. This is the show. And let's see, contestant. Nah, we don't need to do that. Oh yeah, let's talk about the. Let's. Why should this show be left out of the Merck? Let's talk about the Olympics a little bit. So here's why. See, I'm a pro sports fan, and not most sports, just one, as you know. Not to belabor it. When the athletes in pro sports. Most pro sports, I don't know about baseball or football. Let's take basketball. When they take drugs, their performance, their drugs detrimental to performance. That's how good they are. See what I'm saying? Whereas in the Olympics, in the Olympic movement, the drugs they take are performance enhancing. See? But let's just look at this Olympics. So there was a big scandal. Payoffs and bribery involved in getting the Olympics to Salt Lake City in the first place. The athletes doped themselves, a lot of them. No, they don't. Yes, they do, with performance-enhancing drugs. And then there are scandals among the judges, as we've seen this week, because of those subjective contests. I liked her outfit. I liked the music. A 10. So, would that be the limit of the corruption in the Olympics? No. How about jimmying the television broadcast to get a higher rating? How would you do that? A television broadcast counts in the Nielsen rating only when national commercials are aired during the broadcast. Now, you know, some commercials are sold by the network. They're seen everywhere in the country. Some commercials you see because your local state, you know, that's your local bedspread king commercial. So only the national ones count. If a half hour contains national commercials, then that broadcast counts toward the rating. So if you have, let's say, a half hour of the Olympics that doesn't have figure skating in it, and you're NBC, what do? You get rid of all the national commercials in that half hour. Jam all the local commercials in there so the lowest rated part of the Olympics doesn't show up in your ratings. And that's exactly what NBC did. The first half hour was watched on average by 2.8 million fewer viewers than the next lowest half hour. 22% fewer viewers in the 18 to 49 year old demographic, which NBC is targeting. A network does not have to count ratings during any period in which it does not sell national ads. NBC did the same thing with the last Olympics. So thank goodness it's nothing new. And who's hurt? The local stations, because they sold these ads to their local bedspread kings, figuring, well, they're going to be spread out all during the evening. No, they were all bumped into the least watched half hour of the night. So it's crooked from start to it's crooked from inception to reception. The Olympic movement. This about our digital wonderland. Hollywood Studios. This is actually from a trade publication, but I don't have the trade music up, so I'll just read it for you. Hollywood Studios are seeking the help of Congress or the Federal Communications Commission to help protect digital broadcast signals that you might get over the air, if you ever got a digital TV, from rampant piracy. The studios and various equipment vendors have reached a deal to protect cable, digital cable programming, but they remain divided on protecting broadcast signals, the kind you'd receive just with an antenna, if it ever worked. Hollywood representatives say it is now necessary for either the FCC or Congress to dictate that equipment sellers agree to protect digital broadcast programming from unauthorized copying. That protection is considered, according to Multichannel News, one of the keys to promoting the rollout of digital TV. Hear it rolling out now? Nope, you don't. Unlike analog copying, digital copies do not lose picture quality with each copy made. Of course, if they're copying them off NBC, they suck to begin with. I'm just saying what I see on my TV. The President of the United States is off on a trip, long-delayed trip to Asia, to North Korea. No, sorry, to South Korea, Japan, and China. In the wake of the axis of evil speech, which has received a lot of criticism. You know, Colin Powell was on MTV this week advocating condom usage for teenagers who are sexually active anyway, arousing a lot of criticism from conservatives. And the House, defying expectations, passed the Shazmian campaign reform bill. By the way, a lot of people are saying, a lot of Washington pundits are saying, Enron's not going to be a big issue in political campaigns this year. A lot of Republican-leaning pundits are especially saying that. The Democrats, of course, hope that Enron will be a big issue. But I would bring the Republicans' attention to a commercial being run in California right now by one of the Republican candidates for governor, Dick Reardon, former mayor of L.A., who says of the current governor, the Democrat Gray Davis, he's Enron's favorite Democrat, or Enron's favorite governor, or Enron's favorite something. So the Republican in California is using Enron. Anyway, president on the way to China, all that stuff happening. It might be an occasion for a phone call from 43 to 41. What do you think?
Hello. Hey, 41, Happy New Year. You get it? Well, I get two things. It's 43, Colin. Yep. And it's Chinese New Year. Yeah, isn't that weird? Why would you have New Year's Day in mid-February? You know, I mean, I know the Chinese don't observe President's Day or anything, but... So look, Condi gave you a good briefing, yeah? Oh, the best. Good. You know, tabs every page, so there's no missing anything. Good, good. Whereas, on the other side of the hand, you got Colin. Yeah, Colin's a good man. Oh, yeah, he's a good man. He's just not my good man. I mean, it's like he's running his own presidency or something. Well, I mean, I do the Axis of Evil speech, right? That was a darn good speech. Thank you. So I thought I hit a whole one or two with that one. Watched it with Barr two or three times. Really? Yes, sir. Both felt you had great presidentiality. Well, all right. I mean, thank you. Wow. I haven't been this speechless since I got my last Al-Anon plaque. Anywho, Colin goes out and says the president didn't really mean Axis of Evil. You know, then Colin goes on MTV and says people should wear condoms, which goes against our whole Axis of Abstinence policy. Look, you're playing to your right, which is a good thing. Yeah. Colin is playing to the rest of the world, you know. He's protecting the soft, uncrazy flank. Well, you know, next thing you know, he's going to go on ESPN and say we should give Saddam Hussein a figure skating gold medal, you know, just for not having blown up the Olympics. Yeah. Hey, 43, you on Air Force One right now? Yeah, just left Alaska. Next stop, Asia. Oh. Well, you know, it's easy to demonize Saddam. Almost as easy as demonizing, I don't know. Satan? Sure, good. Okay. But you know what stopped us in 91 is still something you got to think about. What comes after Saddam? An Iraq that's so splintered all its neighbors feel threatened? Hey, 41, reality check here. We don't like any of Iraq's neighbors either, do we? Except for Turkey. Okay, Turkey, check. Forgot about Turkey there for a minute. Well, you know, a lot on my mind trying to figure out what to do about this so-called campaign finance, so-called reform bill, you know. Dash's strategy...
Wait a second. Dash?
Tom Daschle. His strategy is to follow in Browsy's footsteps.
Browsy?
Dick Gebhardt. Yeah. You know, no eyebrows.
Oh, yeah.
And hold my coat while I get into a fight with Johnny Boy.
John McCain.
Bingo. Now, I'm leaning towards signing whatever they send me and then just, you know, fast-tracking it to the Supreme Court for...
And I know all that's important.
Plus, I've been worried sick about this Olympic judging thing. Mm-hmm. You know, John Ashcroft was pressing me hard to send the figure skating judges to Guantanamo.
Yeah, he's a tough man.
Yeah, but a God-fearing one.
But look, really want to impress on you the danger of destabilizing Saddam's neighborhood.
Sure,
Condi has talked to you about this.
Yeah, I think that was tab 3.
But, you know, not that there's a personal stake in the issue of not attacking Saddam or anything. Just giving you the benefit.
Hey, 41, I can hit the fastball now. I'm in the bigs. Don't throw me that junk. Your legacy is tied up with the refusal to take Saddam Hussein out. Fine. But, you know, my destiny may be to march to the drum of a different legacy.
Okay. Well, maybe time to talk about all this when you're back in D.C.
Uh-huh. Hey, Dick Cheney says hello.
Great. Where'd you see him?
Oh, up at Camp David.
Yeah.
He's very high on taking on Saddam sooner rather than otherwise, you know?
Well.
It's like he says the quicker we take Saddam out, the quicker we can start rebuilding the country, and that gives a very non-Enron slant to the whole helping of business idea.
Okay, fine. Look, dude, just 43, do me one favor.
Sure.
When you're visiting China, and especially Japan...
Yeah?
Don't give your hosts nicknames. Your Oriental finds that profoundly embarrassing.
Well, I don't know if I can do that, 41, but I do promise you one thing.
What's that?
I sure won't throw up on any of them. Hey, give my love to Mom.
Will do. Give my love to Laura.
You bet. You take care.
Mother liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was 5. Carefully I'd kiss her and send her off to bed. We always stuck with white wine, we stayed away from red. Always stick with white wine, stay away from mother. Liked her white wine, she'd have a glass or two almost every single night after her day was through. Sancerre, Chardonnay, Chablis, Pinot Grigio, just to take the edge off, just to get the glow. You got to take the edge off if you wanna get the... Mother liked her white wine, she'd have a glass or 3, and we'd sit out on the screen porch, white winos, Mom and me. We'd talk about her childhood, recap my career. When we got to my father, that was when I'd switch to beer. We got to the old man and I'd always switch to mother. Liked her white wine, she'd have a glass or 4, each empty bottle a dead soldier. The marriage was the war. When we blurred the edges, when we drank a lot, that's when I got nervous, when the glow got hot. I always get nervous when the glow gets... I still like my white wine and I'll have a glass or 2, and when I'm down I'll drink some whiskey. It's something I shouldn't do. And every now and then I'll take a drop of red when I'm with a woman that I want to take to bed. When I'm with a woman that I want to take to bed. mother liked her white wine when she was alive. She was desperate to live, but her limit was five. Carefully I'd kiss her, send her off to bed. Thank God we stuck to white wine and we stayed away from mother liked her white wine.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is such hot property this week. First, Gary Oldman. You know Gary Oldman. He sold his Hollywood Hills home for about $2 million. He is said to be renting in the Los Angeles area. He'd owned a home with his wife for about 4 or 5 years. They spent 3 years refurbishing it. Built in 1930, the three-story Mediterranean-style house has 4 bedrooms and 4.5 bathrooms and slightly more than 4,000 square feet. Well, do the math. That's a bedroom and a bathroom per... Yeah. The house also has park-like grounds. No ranger, I don't think. It doesn't specify a ranger here. That would really make it park-like. A ranger and a guard shack with a pool, a two-story entry, a living room with a fireplace and beamed ceilings, a study with a fireplace, a breakfast area, a family room, and a hobby room. The asking price was just under $2.3 million. So he sold it for about $2 million to a businessman. Hey, we're all businessmen. Speaking of businessmen, Ron Popeil, you know him, the TV pitchman. Popeil's Pocket Fisherman? He's purchased a Beverly Hills area home in the $7 million range. That's a lot of pocket fishermen. Now in his mid-60s, made a fortune in the 1960s when he was in his mid-30s promoting the Vegematic. More recently, he's been promoting the... who cares? He and his wife, a former swimsuit model, that's what a Vegematic can buy you, were attracted to the Beverly Hills area home in part by its huge eat-in kitchen. He's most at home in his kitchen, where he likes to work on improving his products. The contemporary-style villa also has eight bedrooms, a screening room, so he can see his own infomercials, and a gym in slightly more than 14,000 square feet. But the hottest property, who are we kidding? Ken Lay and his wife Linda have sold their family cottage in Aspen for $10 million, pricey even by Aspen standards. Real estate brokers say that's the most paid on a square footage basis for a previously owned residence in the state of Colorado. The new owners wish to remain anonymous. They paid Ken Lay the equivalent of $3,330 a square foot. The highest price any home has ever sold around Aspen for before is $1,260 a square foot. In Denver, the city's priciest homes rarely exceed $300 a square foot. The Lays, who've portrayed themselves as financially ruined from the Enron debacle, sold the secluded, relatively modest 3,000-square-foot home last week without formally listing it with the broker who has three other properties of the Lays that are for sale. He said the property, it's at Shady Lane. Shady Lane. I'm not making that up, ladies and gentlemen. The property is on Shady Lane. Was a personal family retreat, says their broker, and they were very apprehensive about having to sell it because they'd spent so much time there. They had weddings there. They buried their pets in the backyard. Ugh. So it was a very emotional and difficult decision. The family retreat on Shady Lane. The broker describes the interior decor as very cute, warm and fuzzy, homey cottage. The businessmen who are reported to be very happy with their purchase don't want the publicity. They just happened to buy a piece of property from somebody who's in the news. Another late property also sold this week, an undeveloped lot at the foot of Red Mountain, for less than its $2.95 million asking price. Ken Lay, as you know, appeared before a congressional committee this week on the advice of his attorney, refused to answer questions, seeking refuge in the constitutional privilege of the Fifth Amendment. But according to information that did not make most of the major news outlets, although he did decline to testify, he did send along a CD.
took over a firm with pipelines full of gas. Just wanted to make it top dog and first class. Made up a new plan, helped to write some new laws. At the museum and the opera house, I was Santa Claus. When you live in the penthouse, you don't always know what people are doing in the floors down below. So please hear my story, lend me a hand. You're getting to know the lay of the land. Didn't need assets, that was the key. We became traders of all you can't see. The stock market loved us, the future was set. 'Cause my people said they had a way of banishing debt. When you live in the penthouse, you don't always know what folks are doing in the floors down below. Well, things it didn't work out quite as we'd planned. Weird forces at play, that's the lay of the land, Linda.
That's what our vows said. As Kenneth and I made and feathered our bed. He was big picture, not grubby details. I always paid retail, stayed away from the sales. The skilling was winning, but the cash was weak. Then our whole lives went on a losing streak. Now I'm going on TV, dissolving in tears, defending my name, ignoring the jeers. It was trusted employees left Ken out of the loop. Now they're crying about pensions and suing for soup. He's as honest as Job, straight as the band. We're down to one duvet, that's the lay of the land.
Once called me Kenny boy, now he don't call. When others grow big, it makes you feel small. Soon I'll be down to only one home. Just a really good shredder, that's all that I own. When you live in the penthouse, you let 'em eat cake. Now the Fifth Amendment is all I can take. Supply is the number one cure for demand. My outlook is gray, even time to lay ran away from the lay of the land.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to conclude this edition of the show. I'm just reading this strange message crawling across the silent radio screen here in the studio, and it's just alarming me for no reason at all. Anyway, it has nothing to do with anything. Just, it's a message. It's radio. Anyway, the program returns next week at the same time. Serves me right for opening my eyes. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, American Forces Network, I guess it's called these decades, on shortwave WBCQ the planet 7.415 megahertz, and around the world anytime you want it on your computer at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like knowing Kenny Boy personally if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Would you really? All righty. You know, just, it would be like living on Shady Lane, really. All right, thank you very much, Oh, by the way, one final quote on this whole ice skating judging question. This in today's paper. According to a member of the Council of the International Skating Union, the federation that governs skating, "This is not a new situation to us," says Claire Ferguson, citing the numerous problems the ISU has had before with unscrupulous ice dancing judges. Reason enough. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. I say give them all gold medals. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.